1 Samuel 24. Okay, let's go and pray. Lord, I do ask that you'd help us as we read this portion of the scripture, that we might understand what David did, why he did it. And Lord, there were many times in his trials of life that he may not have handled it right. But Lord, I think we're all in that situation where we've gone through difficult times, difficult situations that we may not have handled it right. But Lord, you are merciful, and I do pray you'd help us to understand your words here. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, throughout David's trials, running for his life, many times we notice that he didn't handle some things as people think he probably should. But that's easy said than done. I always kind of get a chuckle out of it, out of these commentators that watch sporting contests. Well, he should have gone this way. Like they have never been a running back one day in their life, and they're telling how the running back should have gone. They're looking at it from up high perspective, and he's running through this way, and like they're the experts. Okay, and all of us have had trials or problems or situations where we look back on it, and I wish we'd handled it differently. Okay, all of us can say that. David, no doubt, can say that. And the older we get, a lot of times, sometimes we wish we could have gone back in our younger days and handled it the way the knowledge we have now. Okay, but that's not how it works. In chapter 24, I dare say that David is behaving the exact opposite of what the natural man thinks he should be doing. He had an opportunity to kill Saul, and he did not take the opportunity. So here's something I would dare say that he handled correctly. Chapter 24, verse 1, it came to pass when Saul was returned from following the Philistines that it was told him, saying, "Behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi." Okay, the previous chapter is he had David pinned down. It was going to be no doubt he was going to get him. And the Lord intervened and put in the mind of the Philistines to attack the Jews at the right time, so Saul now had to go back and do that. Okay, this is how God influences situations without crossing a man's free will. He does this to saved, he does it to the lost, and the devil can do this to the saved and the lost. When God predicts something, okay, it's not that God is going to force his will on anybody, and he is not a Calvinist. Often the phrase is that God is in control. Okay, that's a nice phrase, but, and yes, in the long run he is, but yet God doesn't force his will on us. And what he does is, if he has a prophecy he wants fulfilled, he will place his words in the mind of people. They will act upon that on their free will. The devil does the same thing. He has the same capability. Satan cannot read our mind, but he can put thoughts in our mind. Example, the Apostle Peter, when Jesus said he's going into Jerusalem, suffer many things, Peter said, "Be it far from thee." And then Jesus looked at Peter and said, "Get thee behind me, Satan." Okay, from God's perspective, if you would hold your finger here and go to Revelation 17, verse 18. In this passage, God places thoughts in the mind of wicked kings, probably demonic kings, demoniac type kings, that they might submit themselves to the will of the Antichrist. And what God is doing is he's fulfilling his will by putting his words in their heart. Revelation 17:18, or 17:17. "For God hath put in their hearts," the "there" is the preceding verse, the ten horns and the beast. "God hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and to give their kingdom unto the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled." Okay, that is the ten federated kingdoms, the mighty men of renown, where they give up their kingdom to the Antichrist. That's not natural. But they're doing this because God is going to place in their mind to act out His will. So He can do this with an individual. He can do this with a bunch of people. Many times in the Old Testament, where the Lord would influence the entire army. The story with Elisha, okay, where they got scared and the whole army ran away. Okay, and that's God's words that came through into their mind. So God placed His words in the mind of the Philistines. Go attack Israel. Go attack them right over here. It's an easy spot. Go. And so they go and do it at the right time. And then when Saul hears about it at the right time when he could have gotten David, now he's got to leave the battle. So the Lord does this in the nick of time. So what does He do in verse 2? Now here again is the illogical thought process of a man who is envious. He is a demoniac as far as Saul is. He is envious. This is a satanic sin. He is under the control of unclean spirits. And so the thought process is irrational. Verse 2, then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all Israel and went to seek David and his men upon the rocks of the wild goats. 3,000 men are looking for one guy. Taking all their time, taking their efforts, being paid by the government as soldiers, taking the tax money from the people in order to get one guy because the king is jealous of him. That's irrational. Just absolutely irrational. And you'll see governing structures do this often. Like if you go back and study the Waco event them capturing David Koresh going into the compound. The guy jogged. They didn't have to burn down a compound to get him. They could have picked him up when he was jogging. There's bigger game going on there. There's other stuff going on there. When they burned down the Branch Davidians and everything. Even the sheriff of the county said, why can't they just pick him up when he's jogging? That was a big, big stuff going on. Somebody was playing around with the American people on that one. And the same goes with all the other things going on in our country. You know, the Oklahoma bombing and the 911 and all those things. That's irrational behavior. That's behavior of people who are possessed with devils. Now, verse 3, it says, Saul came to the sheepcotes. By the way, there was a cave. And Saul went in to cover his feet. And David and his men remained in the sides of the cave. Now, generally speaking, covering your feet is he's going to the bathroom in there. Drop the pants, cover the feet. Okay? That's generally how that Hebrew phrase is used, but we'll see that he's also taking a nap in there. There's more so than that. Okay? But he's going in this cave, and he is going to take a nap because David and his men are sneaking up from inside the cave. Verse 4, and the men of David said unto him, behold, the day of which the Lord said unto thee, behold, I will deliver thine enemy into thine hand, that thou mayest do to him as it seem good unto thee. Then David arose and cut off the skirt of Saul's robe privily. So evidently he's taking a nap in there, and the men are whispering very quietly somewhere around there, and they're saying, get him, get him, get him. And you'll see he cuts the skirt of his garment. In the Old Testament, Jews, the men, like the Scottish kilts, okay, they had some type of a skirt. Now, David doesn't want to do anything. Verse 5, and it came to pass afterward that David's heart smote him because he had cut off Saul's skirt. David had a tender heart towards God. Saul was the anointed. He was the one that God put instead to be the king. And he felt in his heart this was a disrespectful act to a man that God chose. Okay, and his heart smote him. David had a tender heart towards God. So all he did was cut a piece of the material or the leather of this military uniform or whatever, cut that off. And then Saul gets up, whatever, goes out, and the men are still hiding in the cave, gets far enough away. And verse 6, and he said unto his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch forth mine hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. So David stayed his servants with these words, and suffered them not to rise against Saul, but Saul rose up out of the cave and went on his way. And I bet you those guys were, why, man, I don't get this. I don't understand that. Why don't you do something? Verse 8, David also arose afterward and went out of the cave and cried after Saul, saying, my lord the king. So he's up in the cave. They're probably down in the valley. He's probably got it figured out in case Saul turns on them, how they can still escape to get out of there. So he's yelled, and you got 3,000 men now, probably hearing this. My lord the king. And when Saul looked behind him, David stooped with his face to the earth in respect and bowed himself. And David said to Saul, wherefore hearest thou men's words, saying, behold, David seeketh thy hurt. He said, Saul, you're hearing all these rumors about me that I want to kill you. I don't want to kill you. I have no desire to kill you. Proof of that is I could have just killed you. He says, behold, this day thine eyes have seen how the Lord had delivered thee today into mine hand in the cave, and some bade me kill thee, but mine eyes spared thee. And I said, I will not put forth mine hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. Moreover, my father, okay, he is his father, father-in-law. See, yea, see the skirt of thy robe in my hand. And Saul probably reached down and felt. Yeah. He said, I cut off the skirt of thy robe, and for in that I cut off the skirt of thy robe and killed thee not. Know thou and see that there is neither evil nor transgression in mine hand, and I have not sinned against thee, yet thou huntest my soul to take it. And the Lord judge between me and thee, and the Lord avenge me of thee. But mine hand shall not be upon thee. As saith the proverb of the ancients, wickedness proceedeth from the wicked, but mine hand shall not be upon thee. After whom is the king of Israel come out? After whom dost thou pursue after a dead dog, after a flea? The Lord therefore be judge and judge between me and thee, and see and plead my cause and deliver me out of thine hand. Okay, that 13, that's quite a verse. He's saying, Saul, you're wicked. You're a wicked man. But the way he says this, he throws the thoughts back on the Lord, verse 12. The Lord judge thee. He quoted scripture, verse 15, the Lord is going to judge thee. He's leaving that up to the Lord. Now, in verse 12, he says the word avenge. What is the difference between vengeance and justice? Okay, and I would dare say the difference between vengeance and justice is motive. What is the motive? It says that it is joy to the just to do justice. It says, I, the Lord, love judgment. So us as individuals, if we follow the Bible principles, we can try to follow justice as best we can. Okay? If the party we're trying to seek justice against ask for mercy, we can give mercy. Okay? But justice is having an offense justly punished for the sake of the victim. Vengeance, the difference between vengeance and justice is vengeance is I want that person to hurt as bad as I hurt. That's vengeance. Where justice is, you're trying to allow this person, you're looking down the road saying, if I let them get away with what they're doing, and if they commit that same offense to somebody else, am I an accomplice to their offense? Probably not, but at least I need to try to get them to face justice. Now, if I'm doing it just to make them hurt because they hurt me, that's vengeance. Romans 12 says, "Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I will repay." Now, obviously the Lord, knowing vengeance and justice, He can fulfill both and be right. Yeah, in some things, yeah. How far do we do that? He's saying that, Brother Glenn was saying that if somebody murders, their blood is crying out. Okay, that blood is on the nation. But us as individuals, you know, us as individuals, if you try to stop all thievery in your life, we're never going to get done. Taxation is thievery. You see, we're not going to stop all that. I think we should object as much as we can. Object audibly, verbally. You know, like to a police officer trying to commit extortion against you, object. But he's got the gun. You don't want to object to the point where he's going to shoot you or beat you up. You see, but yet you object. Okay, as a nation, yes, when a nation, Brother Glenn is right, when a nation does not fulfill the death sentence, that blood is on, I don't know if it's a nation, I would say it's on the hands of the people who should have executed the justice. You know, I don't believe that us as individuals are responsible for the action of politicians. I don't believe that's on us. People say blood on Americans' hand. No, the blood is on the hands of the one making the decisions. It's on their hands. We can pray for or against. Okay, but in Romans chapter 12, vengeance is the Lord's. So where do you draw the line? It's a matter of motive a lot of times. A lot of things in life as far as God is depending upon our motive. We can do a right act and have the wrong motive and the act becomes wrong. We can do a wrong act but have the right motive and it might be a right act where God might accept it. Example of that is the idolatry in the Old Testament where it said the Lord winked at. Okay, that occurs. But if it's definitely an immoral act, even if we got the right motive out of it, it's still a wrong act. So sometimes our motives play in this matter. David here is trusting the Lord. Here, he is trusting the Lord to fulfill judgment. In the previous chapters, we see that he lost that trust in the Lord. And that's the ups and downs we will go in life with our trials and tribulations. Oh, that trial, maybe I'll give myself a D on that one. At least I didn't flunk it, but I got a D. Well, that trial, I did okay on that one. I'll give myself a B+ on that one. It's a blessing that the Lord looks at our whole life. When he looks at the life of David in 1 Kings, I think it's 15:5, he says that David was a man after my own heart, except in the matter of Uriah. Now what about all that other stuff? Except in the matter of Uriah. And that was a big deal. Okay, so now, how is he going to respond here? Now, for us in the New Testament, let's go to Romans 12 and see for us in the New Testament as far as this idea of dealing with folks. Romans 12:18. It says, "If it be possible, live as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men." Verse 19, "Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink, for in so doing thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good." Now this idea of heaping coals of fire on his head, that is a literal statement. And like what David did, okay, David did not, he had an opportunity to kill Saul, He told Saul about the opportunity. If Saul would have told his men, get him, then David would have heaped coals of fire on his head, meaning Saul's hell was going to become hotter because David was being persecuted without a cause. So when somebody who considers themselves your enemy and they try to do you harm, and if we follow the Bible admonition, feed them, give them drink, and if that doesn't turn their heart, then if they're unsaved, then their hell is going to be hotter because you take away their arguments of going after you. If you fight back with them, okay, then they do have an, oh, see, they responded that way. Okay, and it's not a matter of us just being, allowing people to step on our face, and while they're stepping on our face, I forgive you. No, we verbalize our offense. Follow the protocol of justice, if need be. But as far as the vengeance goes, that's up to the Lord. Verse 16 of 1 Samuel 24, he says this, and it came to pass when David had made an end of speaking these words unto Saul, that Saul said, is this thy voice, my son David? And Saul lifted up his voice and wept. And I bet some of the soldiers, when they were listening, oh, here he goes again, bawling, crying in a chapel. I mean, that's a mark of demon possession. Crying, excessive crying, is a mark of demon possession. Now, obviously, when somebody is going through great pain, funeral, loss of somebody, that's fine. Okay, that's natural and normal. But just the excessive crying about a bunch of doofy little stuff, that's an example of demon possession. Okay, verse 17, and he said to David, thou art more righteous than I. Okay, righteous under the Old Testament covenant. For thou hast rewarded me good, whereas I have rewarded thee evil. And thou hast showed this day how that thou hast dealt well with me, forasmuch as when the Lord had delivered me into thine hand, thou killest me not. For if any man find his enemy, will he let him go away, go well away. Wherefore the Lord reward thee good, for that thou hast done unto me this day. And now, behold, I know well that thou shalt surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in thine hand. Swear now therefore unto me by the Lord that thou wilt not cut off my seed after me, and that thou wilt not destroy my name out of my father's house. And David sware unto Saul. And Saul went home, but David and his men got them up under the hold. Oh, well, I thought, David, you're supposed to forgive, you know, and hug him and love him, and everything's all forgiven. Well, he can forgive him, but you just forgive from a distance. You remember them javelins coming from him. You just don't know sometimes. You can forgive, but that doesn't mean you have to be palsy-palsies and trust after that. That can come with time. Why? This forgiveness here in this matter, it's like a wound that's been cut. Okay? A person... Words. I may have developed a message on this, but I've been thinking about this. Words in the Bible. It's not the words of God called a sword. Okay? And that's true, right? The words of God are called a sword. So our words that come from our mouth are like swords that come out. Like knives that shoot out. Proverbs 18:21, death and life are in the power of the tongue. So if a person issues out cutting words, critical words, harsh words to somebody of their opinion, they're opinionated. And they utter out these words to people and somebody gets hurt by the words. And this person sees they're hurt. Only come back, I'm sorry, I hurt you with my words, would you please forgive me? Okay, yeah, I'll forgive you. And then they walk off. Yeah, that person is right there, cut, bleeding to death. Oh, I've got their forgiveness. How about binding up their wounds? Those words? How about feeling really bad about what you did? How about, you know, saying some other words to try to bind up them hurts, those wounds? Just because a person asks them forgiveness, what about stitching up the wound? What about putting some ointment in there to help them? What about sitting by their side and being a blessing to them after we cut those cutting words? A lot of times people that just flip out these words, they don't realize what they're doing. And they think if they can just up and ask forgiveness, yeah, they can get forgiveness. But what about that hurt that that individual is experiencing? And that's where we got to kind of step in and help bind those wounds. You see, and Saul just shooting out these words. And verse 22, I don't blame David for not going with him. Don't blame him at all. David and his men got them up under the hole. They went back in the woods. They did not know if this guy was going to turn again on them. There's no way of telling. Okay, chapter 25. Now David's out there in the woods with his mighty men. And they become some like Robin Hood. The band there, not that they're stealing from anybody, but they're protecting the folks that need protection from the marauders. Chapter 25, verse 1. Samuel died, and all Israel were gathered together and lamented him and buried him in his house at Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. Now this is a common statement when you hear of some political figurehead dies, JFK gets shot, America is in mourning. Nah. When JFK got shot, Ruckman went out in the streets and started asking people, what do you think about JFK getting shot? He said, a few of them said, thank God, makes the world a better place. You know, you hear a lot of these political figureheads, we're dying, put the flag at half mast. Most people just go on like nothing even happened. Who's the guy that kicked off down there? Venezuela. You know? Chavez makes the world a better place, got rid of the guy. You know, if he got poisoned by somebody. You know, I was reading an article about the IMF. Back in 2000, Iraq didn't have the IMF banks. And several of these countries didn't have the IMF banks, and that's the countries that our country attacked. There's three countries left that don't have IMF banks. Venezuela, North Korea, and Iran. Guess who our country is going to be going after? Money talks. International Monetary Fund. It's international banking that they get countries, they loan money to countries to get them bound as slaves. It's called part of the economic hitman. Good book to read, The Consequences of the Confessions of an Economic Hitman. But that, isn't that amazing how that works? Rothschilds are still going on. Nothing changes. Okay, so Samuel dies, all Israel. I would say the majority of Israelites did mourn his death because of his prophecies. Verse 2, there was a man in Mahon whose possessions were in Carmel. And the man was very great. Okay, very great in the sense of wealth under the Old Testament covenant, in that sense. He's very great. I don't have a reference there. I'm thinking you could throw in Daniel. Let me see if I can get it. Daniel, the exact reference. Daniel 3 or 4. Not Daniel 4. Daniel 2. Let's go backwards to 2. Daniel 2 verse 48. That would be the good reference to use. The king made Daniel a great man. No, he didn't. He didn't make him a great man. Daniel was great in character before that. But then it says, and gave him many gifts. That's the context, how that's used. Daniel 2:48. Okay, that's the idea. The man was very great, and he had 3,000 sheep, 1,000 goats, and he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now, the name of the man was Nabal. Okay, that name means fool. How'd you like to have that name? His name means fool. And the name of his wife, Abigail. Her name means cause of joy. Now, those two don't mix. Evidently, this guy was a smooth talker. But once he got his prey, his real nature came out. Nabal and Abigail. She was a woman of good understanding. and of a beautiful countenance. But the man was churlish and evil in his doings, and he was of the house of Caleb. Now, in order for him to catch this fine catch here, Abigail, good understanding, he obviously could not have demonstrated that churlish nature, that evil nature, in order to catch her. I mean, he couldn't have got her that way. This guy would have been a verbal abuser. And Abigail had to put up with that clown. Okay, rich, wealthy man. Verse 4, and David heard in the wilderness that Nabal did shear his sheep. David sent out 10 young men, and David said unto the young men, get you up to Carmel to go to Nabal and greet him in my name. And thus shall ye say to him that liveth in prosperity, peace be both to thee, and peace be to thine house, and peace be unto all that thou hast. Now I have heard that thou hast shearers, and now thy shepherds which were with us, we hurt them not, neither was there aught missing unto them all the while they were in Carmel. Ask thy young men, and they will show thee. Wherefore, let the young men find favor in thine eyes, for we will come in a good day. Give, I pray thee, whatsoever cometh to thine hand unto thy servant, to thy son David. And when David's young men came, they spake to Nabal according to all those words in the name of David, and ceased. Okay, so David was protecting this man's property without being asked. He was protecting his property, so he is asking for some financial help, food, and whatnot. Basically telling the guy, if we hadn't done that, you would have lost everything. Or a lot. You would have lost much. And so we're asking, would you just pay us a little bit, help us out a little bit, since we helped you out? And if this guy was a reasonable man, he would say, okay, I understand that. Yeah, I think I can help you out. But this guy is a jerk. And Nabal answered David's servants, said, who is David, and who is the son of Jesse? There be many servants nowadays that break away every man from his master. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my flesh that I have killed from my shears and give it unto men, whom I know not whence they be? So David's young men turned their way and went again and came and told him all these sayings. Okay, now this is the man that we just read could have killed his number one arch enemy and refused to do it. Now he's mad. He's going to be so angry that he's going to go kill this clown just because he doesn't help him out. That's how it goes with trials in life. One trial, you can do it just perfectly, please the Lord. And a couple days later, have another trial and do the exact opposite of what you should do. That's life. That's how we are. Okay, and David is so hopping mad here. Verse 13, and David said unto his men, gird ye every man his sword. And they girded on every man his sword. And David also girded on his sword. And there went up after David about 400 men and 200 bowed by the stuff. Now that word stuff, that's an archaic word. You only find that in the King James Bible. Nobody uses that word anymore, obviously. Needs to be updated. Okay, so obviously David's doing the exact opposite of what he should have been doing, what he did in a previous chapter. But that's how it is with our trials. That's how it is with life. That's how it is with trouble. And when you get like that, you just hope and pray that God intervenes, which God did intervene and stopped him. And I'm sure if he would have followed through and fulfilled his deed, the Lord would have smote his heart and he would have felt terrible about what he did. Verse 14, but one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to salute our master, and he railed on them. But the men were very good unto us, and we were not hurt, neither missed we anything, as long as we were conversant with them when we were in the fields. They were a wall unto us, both by night and day. All the while we were with them, keeping the sheep. Notice the servant is saying, my master's a dingling. He didn't come out and say that, but he's thinking it. He said, "Know therefore, now therefore know and consider what thou wilt do, for evil is determined against our master and against all his household, for he is such a son of Belial." That's a son of the devil, that a man cannot speak to him. Well, isn't that a comment? You ever deal with somebody like that at work where you can't talk to them? They won't listen to reason. They won't listen to anything. Why? They're possessed. People are possessed. They're not logical. They're not reasonable. And here this kid is looking at his master. Man, that guy's he's a son of the devil, is what he is. You know it, and I know it. "Sorry, Abigail, I know it's your husband. He must have been a smooth talker to get somebody like you. Why would a girl like you marry a jerk like him?" And she's probably saying, "Don't ask." And verse 18, "Then Abigail made haste." She shows her wisdom. Great understanding. She made haste, took 200 loaves, 2 bottles of wine, 5 sheep ready dressed, 5 measures of parched corn, and 100 clusters of raisins, 200 cakes of figs, and laid them on asses. And she said unto her servants, "Go on before me. Behold, I come after you." But she told not her husband Nabal. He would have forbade it. And it was so. As she rode on the asses, she came down by the covert of the hill, and behold, David and his men came down against her, and she met them. Now David had said, "Surely in vain have I kept all that this fellow hath in the winter, so that nothing was amiss of all that pertained unto him, and he hath requited me evil for good. So and more also do God unto the enemies of David, if I leave all that pertain unto him by the wall, or by the morning light, any that..." Look at there, against the wall. Pisses against the wall. That's a common saying. He is off. You find that in the Bible. And what is that? That is what he's saying. He's going to kill all the boys. Because that's what little boys do. Okay? And he is mad. Out of control anger. "And when Abigail saw David, she hasted and lighteth off the ass and fell before David in her face and bowed herself to the ground. Fell at his feet. Said, upon me, my Lord, upon me, let this iniquity be. Let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak in audience and hear the words of thine handmaid." Notice she's humbled. She is stooping to conquer. Wise, very wise what she's doing. "Let not, my Lord, I pray thee, regard this man of Belial, even Nabal. For as his name is, so is he." Boy, she's honest about her own husband, is she not? "Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, thine handmaid, saw not the young men of my Lord whom thou didst send. Now therefore, my Lord, as the Lord liveth, as thy soul liveth, seeing the Lord hath withholden thee from coming to shed blood and from avenging thyself with thine own hand, now let thine enemies and they that seek evil to my Lord be as Nabal. And now this blessing which thine handmaid hath brought unto my Lord, let it even be given unto the young men that follow my Lord. I pray thee, forgive the trespass of thine handmaid." It's not her sin, it's his. But she's taking it upon herself, very wise. "For the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord fighteth the battles of the Lord, and evil hath not been found in thee all thy days. Yet a man is risen to pursue thee, and to seek thy soul, but the soul of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of life with the Lord thy God, and the souls of thine enemies, them shall he sling out as out of the middle of a sling." What's he reminding him about? She'd heard the story, David and Goliath. She's reminding him about his victories in the past. She's trying to cool his temper down. "And it shall come to pass when the Lord shall have done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning thee, and shall have appointed thee ruler over Israel, that this shall be no grief unto thee, nor offense of heart unto my Lord, either that thou hast shed blood causeless, or that my Lord hath avenged himself. But when the Lord shall have dealt well with my Lord, then remember thine handmaid." She's talking him out of something. She knows he's going to regret doing this if he does. She humbled herself, stooped to conquer, reminded him about the victories. And then the Lord touches David's heart. David said to Abigail, "Blessed be the Lord God of Israel, which sent thee this day to meet me, and blessed be thy advice. Blessed be thou, which hast kept me this day from coming to shed blood and from avenging myself with mine own hand and in very deed, as the Lord God of Israel liveth, which hath kept me back from hurting thee. Except thou hast hasted and come to meet me, surely there had not been left unto Nabal by the morning light any that pisses against the wall." So David received of her hand that which she had brought him, and said unto her, "Go up in peace to thine house. See, I have hearkened to thy voice and have accepted thy person." Okay, so what did she do? She came to Nabal. Behold, he held a feast in his house like the feast of a king, and Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunken. Wherefore she told him nothing, less or more, until the morning light. And it came to pass in the morning, when the wine was gone out of Nabal, and he's got a massive headache at that time, his wife had told him all these things, that his heart died within him, and he became a stone. Heart attack. Something happened. And it came to pass about 10 days after that the Lord smote Nabal that he died. Boy, that guy was hurting for 10 days. Now, the Lord don't do that kind of work that quick often. Maybe it's like that prayer that you were singing. You know, the guy's praying for somebody, the engine stops and the car's brakes fail. I'm praying for you. But sometimes the Lord takes a long time to do that. In this case, he did it pretty quick. So it's up to the Lord what he's going to do, when he's going to do it. Okay, any questions or comments? We'll recover. We'll finish the rest of the chapter now. Yes, ma'am?
Is there a